Hello, everyone, and welcome to Oh, a Podcast, the podcast about playing games and making games, brought to you by O-Rock Studios. I'm Paul Franzen, the head boy of O-Rock.
I'm Michael Gray. I'm the pizza delivery boy of O-Rock.
And you're 10 minutes late, so that means I get it free. Sorry.
Oh, man. I don't know if that was ever a thing. It was...
Really?
When I worked at the pizza thing, we had varying degrees of discounts. So I think there's 10%, 15%, 20%, and 50%, and then free. And basically, we were supposed to barter with the person to try to get them to take the smallest discount.
Hmm.
So it's like, oh, I'm sorry I'm late. Would you like a 10% discount? Sure. Cool.
I tried to get pizza yesterday. Sunday, and the pizza place was closed. It just was not open.
Just all day long, or...?
Just, yeah, all day, no pizza. I feel like the weekend is when you get pizza. Am I wrong? That's like prime pizza time.
Yeah, generally Friday night and Saturday night are the busiest ones. Sunday was when our manager never worked, so I guess it was the slowest day.
Oh, all right. Maybe I'm mistaken, then.
I could be wrong. I don't know. Maybe Wednesday was always the weird day. You could never predict whether you'd get a lot of people on Wednesday or nobody on Wednesday. But all the other days of the week were pretty consistent.
Yeah. We were doing a board game night at our house to play Betrayal Legacy. And we had to go to the second tier pizza place. Very disappointing.
Oh, so second tier Legacy? Oh, wait, I already got the name wrong.
Betrayal at House on the... is this the full name, actually? I'm not sure. It might just be Betrayal Legacy, but it's the follow-up to Betrayal at House on the Hill, which, if anyone out there also listens to the Game Cola podcast, you know Joseph Martin was dumping on a few months ago, and I haven't forgiven him for it yet.
Is it a board game?
It is a board game!
I didn't know they made sequels to board games. I mean, besides, obviously, you know, Monopoly and Monopoly Jr., but those...
Betrayal actually has multiple follow-ups. There's Betrayal Legacy, then there's Widow's Peak expansion pack for the original game, then there's Betrayal at Baldur's Gate, I believe. It's the D&D version of Betrayal. I don't know how much we want to get into this, but I could talk about Betrayal all day if you let me.
Oh, well, this is the podcast about playing games and making games, but True. You said you had some actual topics.
Oh, yeah, all right. Anyway, everyone should check out Betrayal. It's awesome, and Joe is wrong. I've been working a lot on Internet Court once again. We just finished the first round of testing, which we talked about last month, the month before. And I finished implementing most of the suggestions that people gave. And I started a second round of testing. It's all very exciting.
Yeah, that was... I'm going to say a majority of the work I did this month was I took an hour and played through case number one and took notes and sent them to you. I think I only had like three sentences, so I didn't actually take notes. Never mind.
I appreciate it. We got feedback from you and two other testers so far. I have a few more people I'm waiting on, but they got plenty of time. You did bring up an excellent point that right now we have the save and load and everything else buttons available when you're making a decision, but they should also be on the evidence screens. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Well, there were a couple times where, a piece of evidence, when we see it for the first time, it shows up on screen and the player has to, like, click out of it to get back to the normal game.
Yeah.
And that's why I just thought it's like, well, this is a natural pausing point, I guess, for people, because there aren't a whole lot of points where a person can stop and save their game.
Yeah.
So we might as well just have the save button there for those. How many decisions do we have to make in the first?
Or not
like
that many.
5 to 10?
Yeah,
really?
I think somewhere between those, maybe around like 6 to 7, I would say. So yeah, currently those are the only points at which you can save the game because of the aforementioned, discussed at length, pause button fiasco.
It's just very sad, yeah.
I hate it. I hate it. I finally started groveling to our friend Jetty from Game Cola And I specifically mentioned Python, since that's what RenPy is based on, is Python, and I thought he might be more familiar with that. And he said, most of what I know about Python is that you're either 100% a Python lover who loves Pythonic coding paradigms and would never consider using a lesser language, or you're a normal human being. Yeah, I don't think Python, like, as unknown as RenPy is as a piece of software, I think Python, the thing that it's built on, is also, like, not exactly in vogue with the cool kid coders out there.
I guess, what other language? Are they all using Unity these
days?
They're
all using Unity, every single one, and I can't, I'm already too old to pick up a new thing. I don't want to. I know how to use this, sort of. I don't wanna. I think Unity probably requires a little more coding than I am up to in my experience level. No, but one of the testers had kind of an interesting thematic solution to our pausing and not being able to save issues. I want to throw this at you. I don't know if this is something I can actually implement, but I thought it was kind of interesting.
Sounds interesting already. Thematic.
Ooh. Yes, it is. So he suggested adding a request recess button to the game. And when you press the request recess button, you know, it kind of lights up. Like, I was kind of picturing it like when you're riding on the bus and you push the button to let the bus, the driver know you want to get off at the next stop. It's like that. It tells the game after you press it to stop whatever it's doing at the video, when the video
at
ends.
At the next break?
Yes, at the next clip, like after the current video ends, it stops and Super Lawyer 64 comes on screen and says, Your Honor, can we have a recess? I need a potty break. And then the judge says, yes, very well, Internet Court will go into recess until the prosecution returns. And then it just kind of plays like like an intermission like screen and like little elevator music, and then that just does that, and it gives you the chance to save and load and do anything else until you push the button to resume the trial. I thought that was
that
kind
sounds,
of interesting.
Yeah, that sounds really good. That sounds like it could be perfect.
And
I
was just thinking about it right before we started recording. So again, I don't want to get your hopes up yet that it's something I can do, but I had the thought, like, I can just, when you click the button, It turns a variable on, right? And then at the end of each video clip, it can check whether that variable is on and then run this bit of code about the recess. I'll just have to figure out a way to tell it how to go back to the video it left off on once the recess is over. Maybe I can do a quick save or something. I don't know. I think it might be possible. And I think it's kind of funny. What are your thoughts on it?
Trying to figure out how I would program that. Like I said, unless there's an extra variable for every single clip, I think I mentioned that with like the pause button.
Yeah.
What you'd have to do is, I guess, kind of repeat the thing at the end, or repeat the basic, little blurb for programming the screen at the end of every line.
Yeah.
So what you do is you'd have the button, and if the player clicks it, recess thing equals one, or recess thing equals true, true. And so at the end of every clip, it'd say, if recess is true, then da-da-da-da-da. If not, then just continue.
Just keep going, yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't even need to put an if not. You would just have if it's true.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
The program's smart enough to realize it's just keep going with the next line if this isn't true.
So I think it has potential. Would players like it, or would it be really transparent that this is just a dumb workaround? Because, I mean, that's clear. That's what it is. It's a workaround for the fact that we can't do a real pause button.
I mean, how do they do it in chat boxes or chat groups or video chats? I don't know, because I don't... I
mean, like putting an away message up on Instant Messenger?
Yeah, that thing.
I think it's very interesting. We'd have to do different videos depending on what case it is, I suppose, because the main character is different depending on what case you're on.
Or like you said, it could be an away message, so it would just be a little screen that pops up rather than
a
video of a character showing up.
That's true. Maybe it doesn't even need to have a video. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I know you like the games Emily is Away and Emily is Away 2.
Yes.
So, I mean, I never But that's about my biggest experience when it comes to, like, video chats or group chats.
Yeah.
Even before then, I did that in, like, the early 90s, and then I quickly got bored of group chats and didn't do them again. So
I was a big AOL Instant Messenger guy.
Oh my gosh, I hated it so much. It, like, slowed down our computer for whatever reason. I don't know why. It was always running in the background of the computer and slowed everything down to death. So I would like to delete the program, and then I'd get yelled at by my family members who liked it. They'd reinstall it. So oh well.
Yeah, man, that was like what I did after school during high school. Is, you know, I'd get home and just kind of pop on Instant Messenger and talk to all the people that I just saw 2 seconds ago. Oh, good times. But anyway, so with Emily is away, most of the time, like, there isn't really a pause button. You can just kind of, like, leave the game running, basically, and it doesn't really progress at all. Mm. So they don't have a function like that. Like, the way the game works is the character talks, and then you get the choice to respond. And if you just sit on the respond screen, nothing happens.
Oh, yeah, that's just like our game, I think.
Yeah. Except with Internet Court, we have all these videos that run right in a row that you can't save during. Whereas this game... Actually, this game you can't save anywhere. It has save points.
Well, is there... I'm thinking, like, usually there's... I know the way Skype does it is they have no status. You can update your status to say, okay, I'm online. I'm online. Don't bother me. What are those... active, do not disturb, and invisible. What do they do on Discord? What are the... Because I've seen other chat features where it's like, okay, I'm active, but nobody can contact me right now. Yeah. I'm out of the office completely. Or I'm active, I'm talking with somebody else now, so please don't interrupt. I think those are various stats. So yeah. That's what I'm thinking of, what it would be like. Or maybe that's what it would look like where, you know, you have to take a potty break. Actually, taking a potty break would probably be funnier or, than just change your status to, I've had enough, I'm leaving.
We could have, like, a series of, like, randomized away messages that it plays. Like, it could say, I'm taking a potty break, I'm away from my computer, I'm eating lunch, taking the dog out. Or, yeah.
That would actually be funny. We come up with some funny ones, like
I'm giving this game 5 stars on Steam right now. Yeah. I'm following O'Rock on Twitter. Okay, but
say, I'm hiding under the covers in my bed trying to figure out a way to change this trial.
Oh, I like that. Okay, yeah, that's good. Okay. All right, yeah. I'll play around with this. I think there's some potential.
Yeah, well, if you need any help, I'll help you figure out how it works. Like I said, I did it with the Encyclopedia Brown, the Almanac Andy game, whatever we're calling it. Where that did the alternate version of, before you go to the Almanac, it just saves a variable of where you are in the game right now. And then when you're done with the Almanac, it sends you right back to where you were.
Right. Okay. Yes. Sorry. Getting lost in thought trying to think of the different ways to implement this. Anyway, that was one of the more exciting feedbacks we've gotten so far. Other than that, like, people are... I added the full soundtrack to the game, and people seem pretty happy about that, so that's good. So far, nobody has figured out what line was dubbed over in the game.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I'm... kind of surprised. How did you feel about it when you got to that video clip?
I mean, like you said, it's one of those things you can kind of notice if you're listening for. It seemed fine to me.
Okay, good. Yeah, I tried my best. That was sort of the best I could do. The audio quality did not quite match up, so I spent a lot of time kind of messing with it in Audacity. So far, so good with that. The other thing was, someone suggested that there's a part in the game where two different characters can get 3 strikes at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we just have it set up so that if that happens, you just get the bad ending for Diana's character. because that's the only spot where you can get the bad ending for Diana's character. So I just wanted to prioritize that just so people could see it.
Yeah.
But someone suggested that we could have a special ending that's for if both characters get three strikes. That would require going back recording some new footage.
Yeah.
Which might be tough, specifically with Diana, because she doesn't live in that apartment anymore.
We would have to do, like with the, you know, my ending, where the bad ending takes place with that character in a completely different location.
Yeah, you're right.
What was the original one? Like, just an empty playground swinging on a swing, sad and lonely.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Or standing in the snow, but I couldn't get it to record where you could see the snow.
Yeah. Okay, that's an interesting thought. So we could, just re-record it in different locations. I could even maybe repurpose the video of you lying on the bed with the stuffed animals, because we didn't use that for anything yet.
Yeah.
Let's see, was there anything else? Like I said, I'm still waiting for a few people to get back to me, so...
Oh, I like the idea of you repurposing video so I don't have to do anything. That's great. just let me know if you need me to record a voiceover for that, and that's way easier.
Okay. I did finish the blooper reel, too. That wasn't in the version that I sent out for testing, but there is now a blooper reel for case number one.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, we have enough outtakes. I'm going to do a separate blooper reel for each case. I got enough footage, I might as well.
That's
cool. It's pretty good. Not gonna
like
lie.
Like 5 minutes of me eating food. And choking on it, yeah.
There's definitely some, I don't want to spoil it too much for everybody, but there's definitely some footage of you burping.
Terrible. No.
Yeah, oh, so that actually brings me to something I wanted to talk about. That you had mentioned in your email giving me feedback for the latest version of the game. How do you feel about watching yourself act in this game?
Honestly, it's the same way I feel about myself acting anytime, because I've done vlogs, and obviously I've got my YouTube personality. So I generally don't watch my YouTube videos. I don't particularly care for seeing myself acting, if that makes any sense. So that's just sort of my thought. I feel kind of embarrassed, but, you know, my mom's in there, and that's a bit more embarrassing than watching me.
No, the moms have been getting rave reviews. Everyone loves the moms.
Oh, I think it's because I know my mom, so obviously I liked your mom's acting job much better.
No, I thought they were both great.
Yeah, I think it was a funny choice to go with that as opposed to what the original script called for, like two teenage girls, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's way, way funnier to see two older women bickering about Facebook friending.
Honestly, I feel embarrassed that my camera was so awful in quality compared to everybody else's. You guys all had HD, and I clearly had one that is not HD. I could have gotten someone else to record it on, you know, like my phone or I guess my iPad. I think those record in HD, but that would have been kind of embarrassing to just act out for 20 minutes. Plus, that would have been, no, it was more like 40 minutes. Plus, it would have been tough on my wife to, like, hold this camera in place for 20 minutes. Don't move ever, because buying a tripod is obviously...
Yeah.
Too much work for us. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what I did. I mean, I did use my phone for my recording, and I just used my laptop as a stand. Like, I had the script on my laptop, and then the phone sitting, like, kind of nestled in the laptop. That setup worked pretty well for me. But I actually really like that all of the actors. Their cameras are different qualities, their microphones are different qualities. Like, I think it adds an element of realism to it, right? Like, we shouldn't have, like, professional-level equipment. These are just random people Skyping into a chat room. Like, it wouldn't make sense if we were all using, like, you know, super HD cameras. It makes sense that people would have their own individual setups. So, I think it's really cool.
I know, I just noticed when... you know, like the game over sequences with Super Lawyer 64, those are all HD. And the opening part I think, is HD. You can kind of notice when he's sitting, you know, talking directly to the camera, and then when it switches to the stuff I recorded myself, where I'm eating, the quality takes a definite drop. But what you gonna do?
I don't know. I think it works. We can, if we do another game like this in the future, we can try to think of other solutions. But
well, that's just me complaining. It's like I want to look HD.
Yeah, I think it's fine. So.
Yeah.
Well, I'll complain about my audio. I thought I was using a really nice headset, but the audio came out terrible for like most of my dialogue. I had to do so much editing to get it. That I don't know if I've even talked about that. I've had to not just video editing. I've had to edit everyone's audio levels individually too, like exporting the audio for all of the clips into Audacity to make everything sound reasonable and remove background noise. And mine was by far the worst of everybody's. Part of that was because I was recording over the summer and the air conditioner kept going on and off.
I was kind of surprised, because my computer, like I said, I use the laptop, which is not so fantastic, so I could have sworn you probably had to cut out the sound of the computer running.
Yeah. No, yours had some background noise, too. Diana's did. I mean, everyone's had a little bit, but mine was, like, the dirt worst. And I sound, like, muffled at sometimes, robotic sometimes, so it's just the headset I had just, like, was not doing the job that I thought it would do. And I had thought about, like, trying to set up my fancy podcasting microphone that I'm using now, but I don't think there's a way I could plug it into my phone, right? Which would mean I would have to record the audio separately and then merge the files, and I wasn't sure how well that would work. Something to think about for me for the future, though. That headset has to go. It did match my robes, though, which is nice.
Yeah. If we do a sequel on, you know, 27.
Yeah, exactly. My gosh, I'm not even done case one yet. I remember we were talking much earlier this year, and I was joking like, an internet court will probably come out next year. I really hope it comes out next year. I really hope. My hope is that once I get through these few rounds of testings and I'm like totally set on the interface and all that stuff, like hopefully it'll move much more smoothly from there. We'll see.
So what else do you have on your list?
Yeah, that was my main stuff for Internet Court. Really was just talking about some more of the testing stuff, which I don't know if anyone finds this interesting, but it helps me and Michael to talk about it at least.
So on my end, gosh, I don't know what if I talked about it last month or if this happened in between the podcasts. So did I think I sent you the thing with the puzzles for the Britney storyline, right? For the mom's game?
Yes, yes.
Did I talk about that at all last month? Was that last month?
I don't think so. I don't think you talked about it.
Okay, well, that was a nightmare and took forever, and I sent it to my puzzle people, and I heard back from one of them saying, good job, I think it's... I'll take a look now and see how many people in my the puzzle crew. Let's see. Four of the how many? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Ooh, so three of the people in my testing group haven't even seen it. Okay, so I guess I'll just go through this like
sure.
So did you see the? Do you have time to actually check out the puzzles or play through any of them? That sounds like a no.
I have not. I'm sorry.
It's okay. You and six people of my seven testing group. Yeah.
I've spent the last month and a half trying to get a pause button to work.
I know. Okay, so let's see. Puzzle number one was the one which was... Basically, there's an electronic lock, and you want to set it to a specific number. In this case, it's 2642. And, you know, there's a button underneath each column. So you press the button, it goes up, the number goes up, and you need to set it to the correct amount, which is 2642. So I couldn't figure out how to do it what I think would be the normal way, which is, you just, it's like, if the player clicks here, then the image, you know, I hide like the image that's number two, and then I replace it with image number three.
Right. I think you did talk about this last month or the month before.
Yes.
About the your woes with this puzzle.
So I have here in my programming, it's like, why do I do it this way? Because the game crashed whenever I tried using show and hide features. I like how I'm just including snarky comments inside my notes to myself. It also crashed when I tried using normal variable procedures, like Brittany puzzle 1, column 1, equals 0.
I do that too. There's one of our games, I don't remember which one, but there's definitely a comment that says, this is the worst thing that I have ever done. I was so furious about the stupid workaround that I'd come up with.
Yeah, so my workaround is, you can click on the entire thing. That's the workaround. You can either click on the button, or you can click on the number that the button changes.
Oh, sure.
As opposed to, you're only supposed to click on the buttons. I don't think people are going to really notice it. It's kind of obvious you're supposed to click on the button here, but that's just stupid that you have to. Next one. Oh, figuring out the timer. So the timer thing was interesting. That just took forever to figure out. I really wish that the examples on the RenP page helped in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
They refer to a bunch of, I guess, variable names or just things that aren't defined. So it's like, oh, takes child, action equals pause. It's like, I have no idea what that means. That would be an example of something that it explains, and I'm sure that somebody who knows programming just looks at it and goes, oh, I see what the child... I was like, what do children have to do with anything? I didn't get it. But also, I think you have to write things... it looks like you just write things in a completely different way. Do you think there's a difference between putting things in single quotes and things in double quotes? So, here it's like...
I don't think there is. I think you can use either one. But I'm not sure.
Yeah, so here with the timer, it's like, well, if the time is greater than zero, and then it says, comma, true equals set variable time minus 0.1. I think that means if time is greater than zero, if that's true, then we subtract, 1 second from the timer. And if it's false, that would mean the timer is actually zero, and then the game says, jump to this scene.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, normally what I do, how do we normally do jump? I just write jump and then the scene.
And then the label, yeah.
The scene name. So for whatever reason, I had to do jump and then put the scene name in parentheses and in quotation marks.
Okay, so it's different if you're coding a screen versus just coding regular RenPy like dialogue.
Oh, that makes sense. I wish they'd explain this at some
point. The screen language
is
different, yeah.
Okay, so that's why everything failed, okay.
Yeah. Yep, it's kind of annoying. I run into problems with that all the time because there's certain codes and functions that I want to be able to run on a screen, but there's no like defined screen action for it. I was running into that just earlier today when I was banging my head against the pause button for the millionth time. There was some function that I was trying to run, but there was no screen action, so I couldn't do it. Or there probably is a way to do it, and I just don't know how.
Yeah, I'm looking here that, you're right, on a screen, you'd have to say action, set variable name, and then comma true, as opposed to, what you normally do is, variable equals true. Guess what? It's true now. I don't have to say I'm setting it and then separate them. I just put a little equals button. And that works.
Yeah, there's a list somewhere that lists all the different screen actions that you could do in RenPy. I reference it basically any time I'm doing anything with screens. I'll send it to you.
Okay, well, I don't really know how screens work.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Well,
puzzle number three. Well, that was an evil one. So basically, the way this puzzle works is that there's a message which is in code. It's basically just anagrams, so you just need to move the letters around to spell out what the words are.
Yeah.
It's a simple enough puzzle. So one of the words has two different letter E's, and that just sort of kind of broke everything, even though I called one E1 and the other one E2. So I'd have the problem where if I if I put the second E in place first, then everything's fine. If I put the E on the left, I put that into place first, then everything breaks. And then the two E's fight with each other and don't get along.
Yeah, I can tell you what my solution would be to pick a different word that doesn't repeat any letters.
I tried seriously considering that, but I couldn't think of another, like, colonel. Oh, that's got two L's. And then officer and admiral has two A's. And so I kept going with general. I figured it out, though. I think the problem was just sort of the code at the start. It's just basically I'm copy-pasting your code for the seating puzzle for Francie
Drew. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Or any other puzzle like that where you just move things around into certain spots on the board. So you have to check. It's like, okay, well, if piece A is in spot A, if piece 2 is in spot A, if piece 3 or piece 4 or piece 5. And I think for whatever reason, it had one of those E's was doubled.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did a lot of work. So the E was in the correct spot and also in the other spot at the same time. And the game just kept going with that instead of telling me, oh, by the way, they're copied. So my question with the screens, and maybe you would actually know how to do this, is there a way to make it so, like, when all the answers are in the, you know, all the letters are in the correct spot, all the pieces are in the correct spot, the game automatically says, hey, you did it. Because what I have now is you put all the pieces in a spot, and then you select the check answer button, and then it checks to see if you did it.
Yeah, so one way you could do it is that every time you move a piece, oh god, it's something like every time you move a piece, you can
check every single other piece to make sure it's in the right spot,
too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I mean, basically that. And then if everything's in the right spot, then you go jump to the success label.
Okay, I'll take another look at that. I imagine that would require the programming at the start of the init file, which comes before start. That would be a pain.
Clearly one of us needs to learn actual Unity at some point. I was even looking up. I know at one point someone made, like, an add-on software for Unity that's for making adventure games. I wonder if there's one for visual novels, too. But I'm trying to remember. I feel like for most of the puzzle screens in Francie Drew, I do the thing that you said where you just put a check answer button on there.
Yeah, that's easier, yeah. So, okay. Now I need to check what puzzle number 4 was. It's the same thing. It's basically a jigsaw puzzle. So that was programmed basically the same way. That actually wasn't so tough.
Yeah.
But the reason why puzzle number 3 was a killer, there were several dozen variables. How many letters to keep track of? Let me copy paste how many variables. I'll use my 105. Yeah. So there were 105 variables for that puzzle. That's sort of why it took forever. So all I did was I did the puzzles and I sent them over to you. And then after that, I tried going through the Brittany storyline. I only did chapter number 1. And then I got to the part of chapter number 2 where you have to do actual, like, work and thinking. And then I stopped there. So the way I've got... I don't know if you've read the script, but it seemed like a really cool idea at the time when I was writing it, then it ended up being awful, but partway through. But it's basically, you look up 3 different romance novel scenarios, and the game keeps track of which ones you looked. So the third romance scenario you see is always just sort of a copy-paste of the first one you see, with a couple things changed around. That was sort of my idea. And that just ended up just bloating the script just huge amounts to keep track of what the first one you've seen is, how many you've looked at, and then, like I said, there are multiple variations, obviously, depending on what your first one is and what your third one is. So, okay, there's only 6 variations, but still. Another problem I had going through Brittany Chapter 1, this is a stupid problem, is I could not get the player to enter an age correctly.
Really?
So at one point you're supposed to enter what your age is, and then the game just does a quick check to make sure you're, like, within the acceptable bounds, which is I don't know, 24 to 50, I guess, however old it would be, or, you know, whatever age you put in, Brittany's like, oh, that's my age too, yay. But I could not get it to figure out, I could not get the program to figure out, like, you put in the age, and then I say the program check is like, is it greater than 20? Is it less than, say, 65?
Mm-hmm.
And the game would always say, oops, it's greater than 65, no matter what number you put in.
Huh.
I couldn't figure it out. I tried so many different ways of doing the check to see what the amount is. And so my workaround, I think this might have been, my workaround was to create a fake variable, or just a second variable.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think what happens is that when you know, the player types in a number, and then the game, instead of treating it as a number, it treats it as a word.
Oh,
made up of two numbers.
Do you have quotes around it? If you have quotes around the variable, it's treated as a word, and if there's no quotes, it's treated as a number, I think.
What I did was, I did the workaround, which was, okay, if the player puts in 24, then the character's age is 24. If the player puts in 25,
yeah,
the character's
okay.
age is 25.
Yeah.
So the fake out variable just accepts what the player's thing is, and then it sets the age as an actual number.
Wait, so did you have to like type each one individually then, like 24 through 50 or whatever it was?
Yep.
Ugh. That'll do it, though.
So I took a look at the file you just sent me, and here's an example of what the RenPy documentation says. So for a screen, if we're on a screen, here's a control action. Call label args kawargs. That ends the current statement and calls label. Arguments and keyword arguments are passed to RenPy dot call and then what do you call it? Parentheses. So that's sort of what their thing looks like. It's like, I have no idea what any of those things mean.
That all seems very, very self-explanatory to me. Everyone knows what args and quargs means.
I think that must be arguments and keyword arguments.
And keyword arguments,
I don't know
yeah.
what the difference but then, is between those two, but okay.
I was going to say, then the question is, what are arguments?
Those are passed to renpy.call, whatever that is. So, but label, I guess call label means... Mm-hmm. Is that like jump to...
I think it's similar to jump, but you see there's also a different action that
there's
is called jump.
Yeah, okay. That causes control to transfer to label, as opposed to just ending the current statement and calling label. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I see as we can see here, the hide and the show thing, you're right, they are different. That's why they were not working for me.
Mm-hmm.
It only shows a screen as opposed to showing, say, like a specific picture on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it was not working for me. I guess I can try looking at this and seeing if I can figure out another way to get it. I see toggle screen, too. Ooh.
Yeah, I don't know what that does.
Oh, there's lots of toggles. But I see you're right how... If the if feature is formulated differently on screens, so that makes sense. So now that I can see how if is supposed to be formulated, then hopefully I'll be able to change the programming for that section.
Yeah.
So cool. Fingers crossed. It just says if
good luck.
Expression, comma true equals none, comma false equals none. So hopefully I can phrase the expression correctly. And I won't mess up with, I mean, they've got no quotation marks here, but mm-hmm. hopefully that won't screw me up too. I think they made a change in one version of RenPy. I'm using an older version of RenPy simply because I couldn't figure out the newer version that I did the Mermaid Mission Titanic on, which has got a GUI screen specifically for GUI, which I think is useful because it... If you're going to be porting to a handheld device, that would be great. How did you do the port to the handheld device for Francie Drew? Did you just run it through a port system, or was there a program that did it for you?
I think RenPy has an option to, when you're building distribution, under that you have different options for building one to Android or for iOS. So I think I clicked that button. And then I had to cut some stuff out because the file size was too big for Android. That's the big thing I remember, is that I had to remove all the sunset videos from Francie Drew. because the Android couldn't handle that much storage space.
Oh, and we couldn't get Cat President to fit because of the same reason. Oh.
But it's okay. The Android version sold like 6 copies, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed how a lot of the size, I wouldn't say a lot, but there's a fair amount of size which is just built into any sort of game, which I imagine is just making sure the system is up and running. So, for example, if I have a game where it's just 2 lines long, the character says, "Hello, world," and ends, that's still going to be at least like 20 to 50 megs.
There's still like a minimum size that all projects are going to be, no matter what. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I'll see what that is right now. I'll just make one up right now. Ha 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 ha. Okay, get to user mail while I write this.
Oh yeah, sure.
Write this stupid script.
So yeah, we have 3 whole letters this month that people sent us, or three questions that people wanted us to talk about. So do you want the most complicated or the less complicated ones first? Michael? Ah, sh**. My internet keeps cutting out. Michael's been gone for the podcast for the past half hour or so now. Yeah, Michael is no longer a part of this episode. But I did want to quickly answer some of our listener questions before I let everyone go. So, what the hell? It's the Paulcast now. Oh, that's a good name. Oh, I could use that. Okay, so our first question comes from Joseph Martin, who we referenced earlier on the episode. Joseph Martin from GameCola.net, the actual internet website. And he wants to know, RenPy seems to be your primary engine when it comes to your most recent games. How is it for people at the beginning of their game design careers, and what are its strengths and weaknesses, aside from pausing video files? Yeah, so, I think I've talked about this before, but one of my favorite things about RenPy, especially as, to be honest, someone who's still basically a baby coder, a baby programmer, I have no idea what I'm doing. One of the great things about RenPy is that it's been around a long time, and a lot of people use it. So there's a huge, huge community online, huge forums. Basically, any question you might have or any issue you might be running into, someone's probably already had it already and asked a question and had that question answered on the RenPy forums. And if it hasn't, you could ask it yourself, and people are probably going to answer it for you and help you out, except for the pause button stuff. And that's also the case for Adventure Game Studio, the other engine I have a lot of experience with. Big community, big forums, big answers to your little questions. And besides the community aspect, RenPy is just, it's super easy and super simple for making this specific style of game, specifically visual novels. Everything's very streamlined. Like, for example, you don't have to define what a character is or what a background is or what dialogue is. Like, these concepts are already baked into the engine, as opposed to using something like Unity or... insert other coding language here. where you'd have to sort of define that stuff for yourself. Like, with RenPy, you can pretty much just launch the program and start coding right away. Like, start making the game right away. You don't have to do a lot of the setup, if that makes sense. Like, you can just kind of dive right into it. So obviously, the downsides, like I've complained about so many times on this podcast, is that while RenPy is very good for that specific thing, it's not great when you try to do other stuff with it. Puzzles are always a nightmare. Obviously, we've been having a lot of trouble doing video footage and trying to make FMV games with it. But if what you want to do is make a fairly straightforward visual novel, you can't go wrong with this. Like, it's the best way to sort of get started. Yes. Does that answer your question at all? This is weird. I don't like doing this without Michael. Okay, my second question here is from Elizabeth Pfeffer, and she wants to know, which cat would you have voted for in Cat President? And what places in any Nancy Drew game would you have liked to stay in? So I'll start with the second question. I haven't played a single Nancy Drew game, and I probably never will, so I don't know. None of the... There's, like, haunted houses and stuff, right? Like, I don't want to do that. Is there one that's, like... Is there one that takes place in Disney World? As for Cat President, I probably would have voted for Kale. I'm a huge Kale stan. Kale is my cat. And finally, we got a question from Victoria Budkey, who, of course, we all know played Finley in the Pizza Delivery Boy Who Saved the World and was on our podcast earlier in the year. She wants to know, any holiday traditions that you have? A bunch. My family always opens presents on Christmas morning, which I guess doesn't sound like a weird tradition, but I know some people do it differently. We are allowed to open exactly one present on the night of Christmas Eve. And my trick growing up, and a little bit till today too, is that I try to find one that's shaped like a video game and open that so I can spend all night playing it until it's time to wake up and open the rest of the presents. One thing I also really love doing around the holidays is there's usually a big party at my cousin's house, and we play this game called Pirates Bingo, where each person brings a small handful of presents. It can be anything. I usually get, like, junk from the dollar store or, like, stuff from the thrift store. I usually try to find the weirdest stuff I possibly can. For example, one year I had a Hulk Hogan sleeping bag that I'd picked up at a garage sale. One year I just gave up, like, my chemistry textbook because the bookstore wouldn't buy it back. We all put our weird junky gifts in a pile on a table, and then we go around the table rolling dice, and if you roll a 7 or an 11, you get to take a present. And when there's no presents left, you go around again, and when you roll a 7 or 11, you steal presents from somebody else. Hence the pirate. And it's a lot of fun. Okay. This is awful. I hate recording podcasts by myself, so I'm going to end it here. I'm sorry, everyone. You can thank Frontier Wireless for that. Their internet is hot garbage. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Paul M. Franzen, and Michael is at Arglefumph, spelled ArgleFumph. You can check out all of our games on Steam or itch.io, or just visit oarock.com for the complete library. Our theme song is Dead Monster by March of the Danger Men. You can check them out on SoundCloud. Our latest game is The Pizza Delivery Boy Who Saved the World, a visual novel about pizza and the time travelers who make it. And finally, if you have any questions about game development or our game specifically, we'd love to hear them. Email them to podcast@oarock.com. Is there anything you'd like to add, Michael? Nope, still don't have internet. Okay, bye everyone. Thanks for listening.
Oh no, I'm still here.
Kinda looking like yes.
I'm still here.